you're here. Fellowship, sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Reading from Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul, He guides me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me, Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Monday edition of Mark and Friends. It's October 29th, 2012. A few days ago in the studio with me was John O'Donnell and Tom Richardson. And in a few seconds, you're going to hear our conversation and some of John's testimony. Psalm 23 is a meaningful passage in John's life, so that's why I opened up the program with it. So, John and Tom, thanks for being in the home studio here. And, John, I think most of the time I've seen you over the year, it's been on the racquetball court. And before I have Tom formally introduce you, I want to say publicly to our Great News Radio listeners that I think you're a reigning national champion in racquetball in your age bracket. And so you're in great shape. You're 83 years old now. You're still on the racquetball court. In fact, you and Canute were the only team that beat us in a game during our recent racquetball league. So you're still playing well. And I have two singing men, Ken Welch, who all the time picks on me, says, an 83-year-old beats up on you on the racquetball court. And then another friend, who I think you recently met, Herb Ketchum, a neighbor, was at a party, and he said, that John O'Donnell, he's a great guy. And I said, I've known John from a number of years from a racquetball court. But the reason I have you in the studio, you and Tom, is to share some of your story, because in your early 70s, you had a kind of a life-altering experience, and by bringing Tom into the studio, he was a part of that and instrumental in your faith journey about 10 or so years ago. And Tom Richardson, many people know, we've had him on the air a number of times. He's the founder of People Reaching People Ministries, and you can find out more at peoplereachingpeople.net. And he also has materials that we've talked about, a video series that he's produced in English and in Spanish. We'll maybe talk about that, called Bring Someone With You. So we'll talk with Tom and John in just a moment. But thanks for being available. Thanks for coming out to the home studio. And maybe, Tom, you've known John for a number of years. How about introducing him to our radio listening family? Now, he's a great racquetball player, nationally ranked. I know he's been a friend of yours for a number of years. And tell me a little more about John.
Hi, Mark. It's good to be with you. I met John the same way you did, on the racquetball court. I think I just met him sooner than you did. And I soon realized, even though I was playing a man a few years older than me, that he could give me lessons. In fact, he does give lessons. He leads the clinic, does clinics at the university still. But in competition with him, I found him to be one of the most sportsmanlike people I've ever played. Never cheated. Never did anything that was less than above board. And he's someone you really enjoy playing with, even if he beat you. So we became friends through that, and I've enjoyed our friendship over the years, and it's an honor to be with him here today.
For many years, you've been very intentional in sharing your faith, and we've had you share some of your story and how you and Diane met and some of the history of People Reaching People Ministries and such. But you and I have talked about this many times over the years, about the influence we can have as we engage into other people's lives, as we just get to hear their life story, as we get to have them tell us about their family, their friends, and unique ways that you can kind of advance the gospel just through friendship. And you began that with John. Now, were you intentional, like, someday maybe I'll get the opportunity to share Jesus with him? Or did you maybe think, because he had such good character and seemingly a nice guy, that maybe he was a follower of Jesus at the time?
You know, I honestly didn't know. I mean, obviously he had good character, and obviously he was a nice guy. But I really didn't know, because when I first met him, we'd never gone to that area. Now, in terms of being intentional, quite honestly, it's been my prayer many, many times when I've gone on a racquetball court or wherever I am, Lord, whether I win or lose today, may I represent you in my way I do things. So that's always my goal. I want to know about people and their spiritual journey and their spiritual situation, because if there's something I can say to encourage them to a relationship with Christ, I want to take the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. I didn't plot anything. I didn't have a master plan, step one, step two. It's just out of relationship and friendship and discovery and sharing life that these things happen.
Now, John, I know some of the story, and we talked a little off air that you've loved playing racquetball for many, many years. And in fact, Tom, along with myself and many others, are regulars at IMPI, which is now called ARC, at the University of Illinois. And for a long time, you just thought Tom was a pretty good guy. And you didn't learn until one of our racquetball buddies got married that Tom was going to officiate, that he was a pastor. So tell us from your vantage point, before we get into your testimony, what was maybe appealing or fascinating or interesting about Tom's walk or walks of Christians that you had met in your, at that point, 70-plus years of living on this earth?
Well, I believe that the association with Tom on the court and playing with him as his opponent in singles and playing partners with him as a team, it was very recognizable that he was a great sportsman, and the way he treated other people just impressed me that you want to win, but there's a different tone in the way that you do things and the way that you approach other people on the court. It was competitive, but not antagonistic. Mm-hmm. And that's a fine line in that way it is. But you can tell when a person enjoys the game and is very competitive in the game, but has that feeling that it's just a game. If I win, great. If I lose, great. You don't want to be a good loser because you're going to lose more than you're going to win if you're that way. But the attitude on the court and the way he approached people impressed me. And again, this. You say, I did not know that he was a minister. He was just a racquetball player that I enjoyed playing with.
Well, take us through that point in your 70s, early 70s, where you kind of had a health crisis on your mind and heart. Well, maybe before you share some of that, tell us some of your life story. Now, I know bits and pieces. I mean, you fought in a few different wars. You were a fighter pilot. You've had a very colorful life, a lot of different life experiences. So share a little background on your life story, and then bring us to that point where you're in your 70s and you made that life-changing call.
Well, I was very fortunate enough to be born into a good Christian family. Both mom and dad. Dad was a deacon in the church. Mother participated in a lot of the church activities and brought me up that way, attending Sunday school and then going to church. When you're growing up at a young age, you get exposed to that, but sometimes it doesn't really make the impact on your life, or you don't understand the impact on your life as you're growing up when you're young. It's something that's there because everybody did it. My family did it, so I did it. And it was enjoyable, but the impact on your life, the understanding of what you're really going about, takes a while to sink in. And I guess as I got further from home, I got into the military, got interested in flying very young age, and the reason I got into the Air Force and the military flying was because two of my friends and I went together and bought a 40-horsepower Piper Cub. If you've ever flown in one of those, you know if you get two people in them, get off the ground, it takes you about 20 minutes to get to level flight, get the tail up because you've got the extra weight in the back seat. So it's not an overpowering aircraft. But I got interested in flying through these two young guys and myself, and we bought us an airplane. And that was quite an experience in itself. But as I went further, I felt like that there might be something in the military. I was not that great a student when I first went to college. I went 1 year, and then two friends, other than ones I'd bought the aircraft with, and I decided to enlist together. In fact, there were four of us total.
Now, is this back in like 1940, 1950?
1947.
Okay.
We enlisted in the Air Force. And, you know, your family has two approaches to things. My father would never get in an aircraft. My mother loved to fly. Hmm. When I enlisted, Dad shook my hand and says, "That's great. Good. Come on back when you get done." And of course, mothers get very excited and upset and anxious. And she didn't want me to do that. But I went ahead and did that. Then got out of the service after 2 years, came back to school, got a degree and commissioned through the ROTC program at the Southwestern Louisiana Institute in Lafayette, Louisiana, so I was institutionalized at that point. that's later changed to the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, but as it were, I got the commission and still very interested in flying and was fortunate at that time that they were looking for people to be replacements for the pilots who were in Korea, rotating the different units through the combat zone. And I went through flying school, originally class 54A, but they decided that they needed some people over there sooner than that. So our training was rushed up a little bit and pushed ahead, and we ended up graduating in November of 53 and went straight over to Korea. The interest of flying was still there. I was not particularly enamored with somebody shooting at me or me dropping weapons on people, but that was part of the Air Force. And I guess formed an opinion or feeling in myself that what I was fighting for was the country that I had been born into, gave me so much and so much privilege of freedom and being in that country that I felt that it wasn't good to run around the globe shooting at people. However, they were interested in seeing that I didn't have the privileges that I felt were mine being born into the country of the United States, the freedom that it allowed you. And I looked at it as a mission on my part to contribute to remaining that way.
Yeah, the greater good, if you will, in your mind.
That's right. That's the way I felt about it, because I don't think that anyone really has the idea of dropping weapons on people or shooting at somebody is really the thing that you want to do with your life. But it, to me, it was a question of, if you want to put it in sort of normal terms, so to speak, the good guys and the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And that I hoped that I was in the right category in doing my mission and what I was doing.
Now, at this point, you were raised in a Christian home. You attended Sunday school, so you know probably many of the Bible stories. But would you say you had a relationship with God, like where you would speak to him or pray to him or talk to him during these conflicts, during this time serving in the military?
Well, I'll put it this way. Being brought up in a Christian home, I knelt and said my prayers every night.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I was in Korea in the barracks building or whether I was at home. But I guess I feel that knowing more now than I did then, that it was a ritual. I don't want to reduce it to that, but
right,
it was more of that. It was something that you ought to do than really understanding the meaning behind it and the relationship that you build with the Lord through that medium. And so it was more of something, I say, of a habit. You do it because you were taught to do it. And then later on, you come to the realization of what it really means and the association that you have in that respect. So,
and Tom was very instrumental in that.
Very much so, in a very dramatic manner.
And, you know, I'm not sure. I'd have to really think this through, but part of your generation, too, church was common for many people to attend. It was kind of a practice, a habit.
Very true.
If you were a good person, you went to church, maybe not always having that intimate, close relationship with God, but it was valued. It was something that most people, business people, would be a part of. And I know Max Norman, who volunteers with his radio ministry, I think Max is 86 now, and a similar occurrence about 10 or so years ago when he really got that vibrant relationship that God desires to have. And he's this fired up senior saint that, Mark, I learned this concept about grace from God the other day, and every time I meet up with Max, he's going to convey a new truth that he gleaned from the Bible or a book or something that has made his life and his relationship with God very, not only compelling, but lively and active and personal, very personal. Max will say that he went to church, he did the right things because you were supposed to do the right things, but now he has a whole different intentionality because he wants to please God, he knows he's loved by God. And it seemed like in your 70s, and I want to at some point come back to hear how you met Arlene, your forever bride, but in 70s, there was a crisis, a health concern in your life, and you made a unique call, and it's because you knew of Tom Richardson, you knew him from the racquetball court, you knew he was a good guy. I think at the time you knew he was at least a Christian. Tell us about some of that story.
Well, I had known by that time that he was a minister. I met him on a racquetball court, and we had been opponents, and we had been partners as a team. And another particular individual, a friend of ours, Frank Rush, was getting married, and he made that known to me on the court, and I asked him, what church? And he says, not going to be in a church. And I said, well, then who's going to marry you? And he told me that Tom was going to officiate the ceremony. And I looked at him sort of awkwardly and said, Tom Richardson? And he said, yes. And I said, gee, I've known him for the last 8 or 10 years, not even know that he was a minister. And then Frank related to me his relationship with him, and that, yes, he was a minister. And so there was then a different feeling or different relationship other than a comrade on a racquetball court. It meant more to me from the standpoint of this gentleman has known me for years, yet he wasn't beating me over the head or drumming it into me that you got to do this, you got to do that. It was Tom. And now,
you mean he didn't carry his Bible onto that racquetball court all the time?
No, he hit me with it every
time. Yeah, yes. Whatever you needed.
And I needed a lot, by the way, too. But it created a different mindset, a different relationship. And that's where the situation with my health came in. I was standing in the kitchen one evening, and
you're in your early 70s.
Yeah. And I got rather disoriented, a little bit dizzy, and actually just went to my knees. And I was very, obviously very surprised, because I've been very healthy all my life and been involved in athletics.
And going to the knees didn't mean you were necessarily bowing down to pray. You physically
fell to your lost knees. The ability to remain standing. Mm-hmm. I just felt weak and just went to the floor. And I called for my wife, Arlene, and she came in, and we talked a little bit, and she helped me up. And we talked, I don't know, maybe about 5 minutes or so, and then I said, you know, I think I'm going to call Tom and talk to him a little bit. Well, I called, and his daughter, Rachel, answered the phone, and we talked for a minute or two and found out that Tom was not at home. Rachel did not tell me where he was, but just said that he was not at home at the time. And so I said, well, when your dad gets in or when you get in touch with him, why, I'd appreciate it if he'd give me a call. And I didn't think that much about it. And I went on the bed, and I'm guessing maybe an hour later, it was wee hours of the morning by this time, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning our time, phone rings. And I answered the phone, and Tom was on the other end of the line. And I told him, I said, gee, I didn't mean for your daughter to disturb you this time of night. He said, oh, the sun's shining bright where I'm at. And find out that he was in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And he had called me. Obviously, his daughter had picked up a little bit of concern in my voice. And through her association with her father and what he does, she realized that I needed to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. And so she let him know. And
she sent me an email.
So at about 1:30 in the morning, our time here in Champaign, phone rings, and Tom's on the other end of the line. And we talked, I would say, for a good 30, 40 minutes. And Tom reassured me and gave me some very nice insights as to his feeling about the situation, and I explained to him what had occurred. And through his reassurance and praying with me over the phone, I felt much better with the whole situation, because at the time, having been so involved with physical activity, athletics, I had been in such good health that this really floored me. I just didn't know what the situation was. Later on, talking to my doc, I find out through some tests that I have a heart that doesn't fully contract when it beats. And consequently, sometimes the flow of blood to your upper extremities, basically the brain, doesn't fully complete its journey. And that can leave you with a little feeling of weakness and dizziness. He put me through a lot of tests and wanted to put in a pacemaker defibrillator, and we talked about that. And with the what he called the technician, the electrocardio guy at Carl Hospital, and Arlene was brought into it, and we discussed it at length. And I decided, because of some of the restrictions it was going to put on my life, that I couldn't do certain things. As he said, you can play recreational racquetball, but you can't play competitive racquetball. Mm-hmm. And I said, Doc, you don't understand. When you step on the court, it is competitive. I don't care what level you're playing at. But we discussed it, and I made the decision that I was going to go along just the way that I was, that I didn't feel that implanting that in my chest and the restrictions they're going to put on me was what I really wanted to do.
Well, what I want to do is hold both of you in the studio here and continue our conversation on the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends, because I can tell your eyes are welling up a little, because that was a very significant call that you made to Tom, because there was some conversation about your faith journey, a relationship with God. Does he care for me? Does he love me? And you established a different mindset, if you will, about God, I think, from that point and then subsequent Bible studies. And maybe on tomorrow's edition of Mark and Friends, we can talk some more about it. And Tom, you can share some concepts with our listeners about witnessing without fear, how to reach people, how to engage a conversation about spiritual topics. So if you both can hang around, we'll continue our conversation. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, John, for being in the studio with me.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.